And good morning. It's 11 o'clock and time for another Red River Radio Spotlight. And this weekend, Shreveport Symphony has a very busy weekend lined up. Two performances, one tomorrow evening, and both of these feature recent winners of the Weidman Piano Competition, Stanislav Krischenko, who you heard on the air yesterday morning, Tomer Gewurzman, who you have heard, he was last year's winner. He'll be also performing with the Shreveport Symphony. Michael Butterman, music director of the symphony, is in the studio with me today, and we're going to talk about this great weekend and all the music coming up. So, Michael, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be with you. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we have on the program tomorrow night, including two piano concertos. That's a little unusual for us. We have this beautiful Grieg piano concerto that I think people will recognize and love and know that Tomer's going to play, as well as a work by Shostakovich, his second piano concerto, a piece that he wrote for his son, Maxim, to play, and which is not very long, but really, I think, very engaging, with one of the most beautiful slow movements. This second movement is, you know, for all the world, it's, I don't know, it could have been written by Chopin, it could have been Rachmaninoff to some extent. It's just, or Shostakovich, in fact, well, which it is. So these two gentlemen are bookending a work that will be given its world premiere. The whole concert is a celebration of the 65th anniversary of the Weidman Piano Competition, a real institution artistically in the Arklatex, and one of the persons most associated with that over the years was Virginia Sheehy. Mm-hmm. And she is the dedicatee of a brand new work, a work by someone that your listeners know quite well, and that is, of course, you, Kermit. Kermit Poling has written a symphony, actually your first symphony, called, subtitled, the Shreveport Symphony, which is dedicated to the memory of Virginia Sheehy. And we are delighted to be presenting this on the concert tomorrow. For those of you that don't know, Kermit is the music director of the South Arkansas Symphony, the Marshall Symphony, Shreveport Metropolitan Ballet. Help me out here. I'm probably missing a few
others. Those are the main ones.
That's right. And then, you know, as a composer and an arranger, you've been active for couple of decades.
I have been certainly not at the activity level that I am these days. For a long time, I wrote, and I used to write all kinds of songs and stuff like that too. Mm-hmm. But I never really took it as seriously because I was just so focused on either violin or conducting both. And over time, I guess other people have asked me to write music, and they've enjoyed it, and it has kind of snowballed a little bit. So I've been very active, which was one of the reasons why I stepped down as concertmaster from the symphony, because
right,
just something, too many things going on at one time. But I certainly, I love it. I love that aspect, you know, being on both creative ends, creating the music and also, you know, performing it.
Right, absolutely. So the work that you, I guess, first found yourself doing as a composer and arranger was maybe for, as you say, for voice or for, let's say, chamber ensemble, string quartet, mm-hmm, things like that. But more recently, in particular, you've done a lot of work with ballet, right? Not only that we've played here, but also a lot of places around
the
country.
That's true. There are six full-length ballets that I've done, three of which were for Shreveport Metropolitan Ballet, and in fact, we'll be doing Aladdin, which is my ballet. We'll be doing that in April. But there were a couple of pieces written for the Oklahoma City Ballet and also for the Hart School, Hartford University, and that includes Peter Pan and Beauty and the Beast and Phantom of the Opera. And I am working on another ballet at this point, which is a ballet version of Camelot. Ballet has been very good to me, and I love it. I really do love ballet.
Right. So the chance to write a symphony then is something different. You know, with some composers, they treat this form, if you will, this genre, the symphony, as something rather maybe abstract, or let's say that they treat it formally. They, mm-hmm, will write a theme, they will break it down, develop it, and so on. Other composers, I think of Berlioz and his Symphonie Fantastique, write programmatic music. They tell a story, or they paint a picture, mm-hmm, with their symphony. Did you have a particular approach in mind as you wrote this Shreveport Symphony?
Well, it's definitely the most formal of any of my pieces, but, mm-hmm, it's not true to form. I suppose the first movement's probably the closest to that, you know, ABA.
Right.
But it's part of it, but you know, there's no question that this piece is also inspired by this community. So it is programmatic to some sense. It's not like episode specific, like this is the rain and this is that, but it does have certain reflections of it, of certain places in the Shreveport area, the Shreveport community.
Well, you wrote it in four movements, which
and that is traditional.
That is traditional, right? And there's a slow movement, which is the second movement, and a relatively brief third movement, and not exactly a scherzo, but something a little lighter, and so on. And the outer movements have slower introductions, and so I mean that part seems to fit. And yet, you didn't call the movements Allegro Non Troppo, and Adagio, Lamentoso, or anything like that. You gave them titles that reflect. That call to mind a particular image. That for the opening is sunrise, and then over Cross Lake and drive into town, and then this beautiful second movement evoking the wistfulness of being in the
Oakland Cemetery.
Oakland Cemetery, yeah. Exactly right. I wonder if you would share with the listeners your process. In other words, did you create all of this music from scratch, or were you drawing on inspirations from works that you had written in the past, or how did that work?
Actually, yes to both questions.
Okay.
It was actually very difficult for me to just think abstractly in terms of, well, I'm just going to write a symphony, because most of my music is centered around something, either a film score in which you have a story or something that you're accompanying, ballets, the same type of thing. So I actually had to find something to use as a kernel. And early on, I started thinking maybe poetry, and I went to, you know, the Sheehy family and said, well, are there any particular poems that Virginia liked, that type of thing? And then finally, I just hit on it. You know, she loved the city. You know, why not find aspects of the city, and then chose four. The second movement, which you mentioned, it happened to coincide when I was working on that and really kind of struggling over that, what I wanted to do for it. It coincided with a documentary I was producing with Dr. Gary Joyner, who's a historian here, and the documentary was called A Walk Through Oakland Cemetery. And he literally took me, along with Dr. Cheryl White, we went for a walk through the cemetery, and I hadn't been there probably in... 30 years. Mm. And when I first moved here, it wasn't in very good condition. And yet there's a lot of history there. And I feel bad that in all this time, I really had never gone back to there. Well, Virginia, among others, had raised a lot of money to restore a lot of the cemetery. So there's this connection to her. Yeah. So there are streets that go through it and sidewalks. And so we're going through and we're seeing all of these tombstones that were related. You have Union soldiers, you have Confederate soldiers, you have the hundreds of people who died during the yellow fever epidemic that was here. You have Shreveport's most famous madam, Annie McCune, from the late 1800s, buried there. You know, you have a seedier part of Shreveport's history, if you can call it that. There certainly is that jazz and bluesiness that came in the Leadbetter area and all of that. And all of that is kind of connected there. So, you know, that movement in particular kind of goes through it as if you were going through a walk and seeing more and more of these things. So
right, yeah. I noticed that there are these episodes in the second movement that are distinct musically. They have these little signatures almost and personalities all their own. And it's quite clear that you were evoking something of the folks who. Whose lives are represented in that cemetery. Is there a part of that you want to share?
Sure. And I do want to play a little bit of the opening theme from that movement, which you talked about borrowing from myself. I did. For music that I composed for a production of a River City Repertory Theater some years back that did Glass Menagerie. And I wrote a very simple tune for that, and it was music that was played at the beginning and since then had never been used. And I thought, you know, that would be a nice way to start and get into this particular movement. So I'm going to play the original version as it was. I'm not going to play the new version because I hope you'll come and hear it on Saturday. But just to kind of set it up, and then maybe we'll get into a little bit of the bluesier section. So here's the opening theme. Thank you. So that the opening prologue to the show, to the Glass Menagerie.
Right.
And it seemed to set the mood to me for the walk, which then when you get into the walk, the music becomes a lot more bluesier, and that's what we were talking about, and I'll play a little bit of that. So this bluesy thing just repeats, and each time the orchestration adds until finally.
Right. And we should point out that what we just heard there was a synthesized version of what we are going
exactly.
to play,
exactly.
Which represents it well, but at the same time, when you hear the actual acoustic sounds, it will be something very special. Speaking of the actual acoustic sounds, there will be an opportunity, in fact, for people to hear this not just tomorrow evening, but also well into the future, because we're going to be recording.
Which is
this,
exciting.
Yes, it is exciting, absolutely. For us, it's been a long time, and so we're making a recording of the performance, and with a few fixes here and there, if necessary, and that will be available to patrons in the future. It may take a few months, I guess, to get that produced and so on. But that's going to be something that we'll be able to hold on to and remember. Now, I might ask you to just share with us a little bit about the genesis of the project. It takes. Time. It also takes some
sure.
support and funding to make things like this happen. And I'm just wondering if you might want to talk about how this idea
sure,
came about.
Sure. Well, Neil Johnson, who is such a well-known photographer in this area, also writes an arts column for
right.
the Shreveport Times at this point, loves music. I was in his studio for photos, and we just started talking about that. And he literally asked about if, you know, I had done a symphony for the symphony, and I just kind of said, well, you know, I've done all these other things, but frankly, no one's asked me to write a piece like this. And I think he just made it his mission
yeah.
to get it done, because
yeah.
I know he spoke with you, and he also went to Michael McCarthy, who's
right.
the president of the Opera Board, also another arts patron in town here, to get the project going, raise the funds to help. And then it just, you know, from that point on, you know, the project kind of steamrolled. So
right.
it was about a year and a half ago. Yeah.
And the idea of dedicating it to Virginia seemed like something that just sort of made sense all around from his perspective. If you're going to call something a Shreveport Symphony, she seems like the natural, perhaps, person to think about.
Yeah.
And, of course, then placing this on the concert with the Weidman celebration just sort of all came together. And I just, before you know we go, I wanted to ask you to share with the listeners something that you mentioned to me. And I confess, as I've been studying the piece, I did not notice this. But so
it's pretty subtle.
Well, it is. All right. So I here's what I'm talking about. The beginning of the fourth movement, as I mentioned, it has what I would call a slow introduction or majestic kind of almost fanfare kind of feeling to it. And you said, well, you know, that's a little evocation of the Tennessee Waltz. And I thought, oh, I guess it is, come to think of it. But it's just, it's not in, 3-4. And so it does,
it's
it
true.
Has a different kind of feel to it. But why the Tennessee Waltz?
Virginia, from the time when I first moved here, and of course, mostly at that time, she knew me, even though I came in as, you know, assistant conductor and you know, concertmaster, but most of the time as a violinist. Every time she would see me, she'd ask me to play something I generally didn't know. Tennessee Waltz came up a lot,
mm-hmm.
As did Jambalaya on the Bayou and a few other, you know, songs that are kind of like that. And I think she just used to like to see me kind of stutter my way through and kind of go, well, I'm sorry, I just don't really know what that was. So those are a couple of songs that I really closely associate with her, that and When the Saints Go Marching In,
right.
you know, we're in Louisiana, and you know, it's obviously an associated song. So I was really trying to find a way to incorporate some of those into this for a direct connection to her songs, music that I would connect with Virginia anyway. So I did manage to sneak the Tennessee Waltz in there in a way that it wouldn't be really obvious. But if you actually look at the tunes and the fanfare, upper notes, the melody of it, plus this little falling line that's in the strings that's also covered up by that big fanfare, the whole melody is actually there. I've got a little clip. We'll see if we can kind of hear it.
Yeah.
But hear what the beginning of that sounds like. This is the last movement, the opening section. So the Tennessee Waltz is only in that little opening section,
right.
And that now doesn't take very long to get to When the Saints Go Marching In, which is actually heard backwards,
right?
In the orchestra,
of course. The way we know it.
There is one point where it kind of calms down, and it is heard as you might expect to hear it. Just one little quiet, I guess, a tribute there, if you want to call that.
Right.
But most of the time, when you hear Saints Go Marching In, it is backwards.
Well, the whole piece is so just evocative. It speaks emotionally, I think, to people. And then, of course, knowing these little tidbits about the quotes here and there is just an extra layer of something to appreciate and to listen for. And I think it's what all great music has to it. It has that sort of immediate sort of visceral impact, but then there's also this layer of, there's this and that to pay attention to as well.
Cool. Well, so, can I say, I'm grateful you are performing it. I'm just so honored.
We are really pleased to be able to do this and to share music about our community with our community, and to do it in a world premiere like this is just terribly exciting for us. So it's going to be a great concert with music of Shostakovich and Grieg and Poling. The next day, shall I mention,
sure,
this?
Absolutely.
The next day there is a recital happening as part of the Noel Foundation Chamber Music Series at the Louisiana State Exhibit Museum. The auditorium there is being officially dedicated to the memory of Van Cliburn, mm-hmm. An extremely prominent native Shreveporter.
Absolutely.
And the recital will feature these two pianists that you've mentioned, Stanislav and Tomer, playing some solo music, but also playing some four-hands music, some duets. Something
it's going
to be fun. One doesn't get to hear all the time.
Brahms Hungarian Dance?
I believe so. But, yeah, absolutely.
And you and Jennifer.
Jennifer and my wife and I are going to be playing just at the very beginning a short piece by Mendelssohn. We had the privilege of meeting Van just once, but it was very memorable, and to be included on that in this recital, dedication recital, is very meaningful to us. So it's an exciting weekend, and I hope that that your listeners will be able to join us for both of those events.
Sunday's concert, by the way, is a free concert. And information about that is on ShreveportSymphony.com on that website. Tomorrow night's concert, of course, if you want to get tickets for that, available through the website. You can also call 318-227-TUNE, just think TUNE, 227-TUNE-8863 is what that comes out to in numbers, for tickets and information. Again, tomorrow evening's concert with the Shreveport Symphony Orchestra, two great piano concertos, the premiere of my symphony, which I'm very much looking forward to and a little bit nervous if I say so myself, and then Sunday's chamber music concert. Again, Michael Butterman, thank you so much for being here, and as always, before each concert, and I'm looking forward to it. I get to sit out and twiddle my thumbs.
Absolutely.
And walk nervously as you're doing my piece.
Well, we'll try to do you proud.
Oh, you will. Oh, absolutely. I'm so looking forward to it. And if you're with an organization and you have an event coming up you'd like to be featured on a future spotlight, give us a call at 800-552-8502.